All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, February 6th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, okay. There we go. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to get you started. Keep winning FanDuel and DraftKings NBA, MLB when the season comes around, NFL, obviously. We cover it all under one subscription package, which is free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month. After that, you're all good to go. So go over to DFSR.com/fantasy, and you can get set up there at members only chat as well. It's all included under one subscription package. We don't section it off by sport or by provider or whatever the other sites do. We have it, we cover it. You're all good to go, free for 3 days, and then $34.95 a month after. Buddy, long weekend, good weekend, fun Super Bowl. Obviously, when this is not the NFL podcast, but I thought that from a sports standpoint, I don't know about you, but I've long since ditched my tribalism sports allegiances into just kind of just rooting for good stuff to happen. For me, I was like, we were texting, but it was mostly just rooting for the Eagles to win because it just seemed like a cool story, and I was in Philadelphia, so it was going to be a huge bummer if they if they didn't win. Do you kind of feel the same way about sports at this point, having done this for so long? I personally get confused when people can still root for specific teams in the DFS space. but maybe,
well, the DFS space in particular, because you see this with like your season long fantasy football team, right? Like you can get away with just not having Tom Brady on your team if you just don't like him. But in DFS, you just can't. There's too many games, too many teams. Then oftentimes this difference between a good decision and a bad one is so stark and just a guaranteed loss that, yeah, you it's a good cleanse getting into DFS. Because I used to have to go jump in my pool every time the Mets lost, for instance. And now I just could not care less what they do, how well they do. I just want to go to sleep after each night of baseball, regardless of what's going on. So I'm with you there.
Way to work a humble bragging about your pool into that.
Buddy, I don't have my pool anymore. I had to sell my pool because I lost six figures in the housing crisis in the 2000s. So there's my – or is it a humble brag just because I had enough money to buy the house? You do the math on that one, my friend.
That was an interesting looking chart there that you just described. Okay, here we go. We're going to break down every game on the NBA slate here today. It's actually a decent size Tuesday, all things considered. And there's definitely some injury news and notes that we're going to want to dive into that are going to affect the slate. Some we already have an idea about. Others we're going to be waiting on news that I think we'll probably get in time for lock today. And I think we'll have a pretty clear sense of just sort of where we're going for different teams. I don't think there's gonna be so much hanging out there, but we'll go with game by game here and kind of just take a look at what some of the teams are looking at today. The first game is 7 o'clock. There's only one 7 o'clock game. Cleveland goes in to play Orlando. Cleveland, a 6.5-point favorite here against a Magic team that is now playing. Well, this says a lot about the Cavs, really, but they're only 6.5 favorites against a Magic team that is going to be without Aaron Gordon, is already without Vucevic, and it's just kind of a bad team. But man, Cleveland, they're bad. I don't really know another way to put it. And so when we're looking at, we can get into some of the defensive issues, but when we're looking at this, how do we want to, are we just attacking the Cavs in DFS at this point, sort of the same way we talk about like the Suns and the Kings, like in terms of just like that we can just play anybody against them? I kind of feels like we're in that spot at this point. I mean, with their defense.
Yeah. Well, it's funny when you call them bad, because it's like, you know, they are 9 games above 500 and would currently be the 4 seed in the East. So they're not like bad, 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 but yeah, the points allowed are pretty grisly this year. They've basically been getting by on offense alone. They've allowed more points per game than any team in the East outside of Orlando. So you can certainly attack them. They're kind of volatile though, right? Like since they have such a good offense, they also score the second most points per game in the East too. So, they can score those in a hurry and in bunches. And, you know, I still do think that you're always talking about blowout risk whenever Cleveland's involved. That being said, I don't think it's significant enough to ignore Orlando here. I think there's a number of guys in really good spots here.
The Orlando guys' minutes have been weird lately. They haven't been playing, even without Gordon, they just haven't been playing anyone too many minutes. Now, they've been in a lot of blowouts, so it's been a little hard to tell what's going on. Hazonia did get the start last night. Spates, they've been starting for Gordon for a couple games, but they moved Hazonia back into the starting lineup, and he was pretty good. He's still coming at a value, only 5,000 on FanDuel. Actually, I think his minutes are pretty safe, but even guys like Peyton, Fournier, Simmons, like they've been playing less than 30 minutes a game. I just don't know how much we can really rely on their run. I mean, these guys, their value in the past has been that they, like Fournier and Simmons specifically, their value in the past has been that they just play. And that really just hasn't been the case, right, in the short term. And I just don't, I want to, let me put it this way. I want to be able to play these guys, and I'm just not sure I can totally trust what the Magic are doing with the rotations.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it. First of all, Orlando is involved in tons of blowouts, and that certainly has led to some minutes uncertainty. Like, as the people, in case you're a new listener or, you know, you just have forgotten this from the past, every single night we go through the game logs for every team that's going to play the next day and try to figure out perfect minutes for every single player. Orlando's one of the hardest teams to forecast because on one hand, sure, they've been playing some up and down games, and you look at a guy like Jonathan Simmons and it's easy to say, okay, well, he's got 35 minutes in two of his last six games, and, you know, there's some weird game scripts. But what about last game when they won by 2 points against Miami and he played 27 minutes and only had two fouls? Why didn't he get his minutes in those games? You know, like, and that's right. Not the only game that's like that. Like, you know, they lost by two to Indiana and Simmons played 23 minutes in that one. So I think when you're trying to forecast minutes like this, it's best to think about it in ways that we've talked about in the past, which is basically just try to figure out a scenario, you know, and kind of construct your lineups accordingly. And so what I mean by that is, in this case, you'd say, in the event that this game stays close, there's a chance that the following players go off: Hezonja, Simmons, maybe Payton, maybe Fournier, whoever else. And in the event that it's a blowout, well, here are the players that could be good or bad, or, you know, try to figure out how it would affect those game scripts. I think for games where you have to construct scenarios where there's so many, you know, kind of binary outcomes, like Simmons playing 24 minutes is a cash game disaster. If he plays 35 minutes on his current prices, it's, you're dancing in the streets. That just sounds like a big tournament play to me. And I think that's how I would treat Orlando today. I wouldn't be surprised if they played anywhere between 25 and 35 minutes. So, and I'm talking about the starters that you're going to be considering for DFS purposes. So I think when you're in a position like that, you don't want to invest too heavily for cash.
I did write over the weekend, Isaiah Thomas had called out the team, the Cavs, for not diving on the floor and getting after loose balls on defense. Like, it was like kind of questioning their effort. And I
Isaiah Thomas, I haven't read your article yet, but known hustler. I mean, known just like lockdown. Well, defender. I went back
and watched. They got completely smoked by the Rockets. I went back and watched. I was like, I'm going to go pull out some game tape here and just like some defensive stance. Well, that's in quotes for the Cavs, and just see what happened. It took me all of like the first 6 minutes to figure out four different occasions where he just got completely smoked on defense by somebody.
So this
like,
is where you're getting mistaken here, because what he's talking about is when he was on Boston, all the other guys tried really, really hard and then he didn't have to. And now that he's on Cleveland and they're not trying as hard, he's like, come on, guys.
Well, basically, I mean, it was like
everybody and stop the people from scoring. And I just get to like,
it was hilarious to watch. I saw the thing on Twitter. I was like, in the morning, I'm just going to queue this game up and just see how long it takes to like find the possessions that it took for him to get, I don't know, completely worked over. And it just was like, okay, 6 minutes in, I got the whole article written. Like, it didn't take any time at all. On the Cleveland side, you know, they have started without Love. They started Crowder at last game. They could make another switch here. I'm not positive about what they do. That the net rating on that, the net rating on the lineup where they have Crowder in it with like Thomas and Crowder is like one of the worst negative net ratings in all the NBA for qualified five man units. It was like minus 23 or something like that. Some insanely, nice. Insanely bad number. Do you like anyone here though on Cleveland? Because they're supposed to put up some points. And the Magic aren't a good defense. One of the highest, they do have one of the highest implied totals of the day. Anything you like here about Cleveland, then we'll move on.
Yeah, I think I'm still looking at LeBron. I know it's been a tough three game stretch for him and he only played 31 minutes against Houston, but all indicators are that he's still going to maintain a really significant usage, even with Thomas back in the mix. Thomas certainly cutting into his time of possession. If you look at stats.nba.com, they have great tracking statistics there. But I think in a fast-paced matchup with Orlando, where he should still rate to have the ball in his hands quite a bit, I think that he is playable here. I think some of these other guys, you know, there were some price inefficiencies, guys like Dwayne Wade, you know, maybe even J.R. Smith. Those have kind of normalized a little bit. And I think for those guys, I'm not super, super excited. And I'm curious to know what you think, or to hear what you think about the power forward situation, because they've kind of been spreading minutes around. And you'd think that a guy like Jay Crowder would be playable on 4,000 at like a 26-minute rotation, but that hasn't totally borne out yet. Is there stuff outside of LeBron that you're seeing here that I'm not?
Not really. I like LeBron. His usage has gone down a little bit with Thomas on the floor with him, and that is gonna be, it's gonna be weird to look at his full season stats and kind of just make it a 1-to-1 comp of what he's gonna do. They're just not very good. They can't keep Crowder on the floor for long enough because he's a huge liability. So they just kind of, you know, they're switching Channing Frye at times now. They ran an insane lineup against the Rockets the other night where they played Thomas, Wade, Green, Korver, and like J.R. Smith. Like that was the five man unit that they had on. Oh no, and Rose. It was not Smith, it was Rose. I think they're just doing some weird stuff with their rotation. And that's, by the way, that if that's your lineup for more than a minute, you just be probably fired as a coach. But they're just doing weird stuff with their minutes and you just really can't trust it. And I just don't know. I'm with you. Outside of LeBron, I don't know if there's anything I'm really wanting to trust with this team. And I hope they turn around, but it's looking bad. All right, let's move on to some of these other games. Milwaukee goes in and plays the Knicks. No line on this game as of right now. Not sure what they'd be waiting for on what would keep a line from going out here. Giannis is probable, so I don't think that's the thing unless they were just waiting on definitive news on him. Other than that, there aren't a ton of injury news and notes besides just general stuff like, you know, Bucks being without Brogdon for the time being now. Anything you like in this game? I mean, Giannis is a big money play. Was not very good last game, though there was some law concerns. Anything you like from this game?
Yeah, I mean, Giannis is another guy that people are going to keep going back to on these price points because, you know, we've seen higher prices and he's supported higher prices in the past. I'm starting to get a little bit more, you know, several times bitten and even more shy about Giannis right now because what we're seeing is that the assist downside, I think, is just too considerable for him to maintain an $11,000 plus price tag with any sort of certainty going forward. Just 6 total assists in the last 2 games, now averaging 5 assists on the season, where early in the season it looked like he was going to be something like a 7 or 8 assist a game guy. And if those assists continue to trend downward, you know, he does a lot on the points and rebounds, don't get me wrong, but is it quite enough to sustain being one of the very, very highest paid players in the league, at least from a DFS salary perspective? I'm just not so sure.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things you're kind of happy to buy Giannis on in the past was that he was also one of these sort of like in the Anthony Davis group of just guys who could play 40 minutes in a game. And that, since they fired Jason Kidd and he had some injury issues, that just hasn't really been the case either. Now, there's been some game script stuff, but the most minutes he's played in the last basically 2 weeks is 37 minutes. So 27, 37, 35, 35, 34, 32. You know, in the past, we had him up in the 38 to 39 range. If that's not going to be the case either, he is going to struggle to, you just need to, when you're in this price range, you need to be kind of locked into like 38 minutes. Are you concerned at all with the minutes there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if his peak is going to be something like 37 minutes, then that's, I think that point is very, very, very well made. I mean, he missed some time with injury. He was something of an Iron Man for them, but how many players in the NBA really consistently play 40 plus minutes per game? There really just aren't very many of them. And most of them do get injured and then their teams ultimately change their mind. And we'll talk about James Harden, I imagine, in a second in another 7:30 game. But you're seeing teams trend away from this. And I think it's really smart. I mean, if your team has playoff hopes or not, if you just have long-term hopes, the math just shows that it's probably not the right move to play guys 40 minutes a game. So yeah, I think that if the minutes aren't going to be there for Giannis and the performance is slightly down, the usage is slightly down, overall time of possession is down, we'll probably see a little bit more of a price correction before we want to buy in anything outside of like the very, very best matchups.
Yep. And he did. I mean, and people will say, well, look, he did against the Knicks last game, when they played him 2 games ago, he went 37 minutes and he went 29 points, 11 rebounds, had a ton of defensive stuff and basically was at about 5X on this price. So I think you can look at a short term.
And 300 points is like good if you can get that. But if that's the peak, then that's the peak, you know.
For sure. Knicks side, you know, over the weekend, we were on Kristaps Porzingis as a play. I'm not sure this is a great matchup for him. I'm wondering your thoughts on Tim Hardaway Jr. So Hardaway, I you know, it was so late last night. Did I write him up? I think I wrote him up last night. I can't remember. I was writing the picks in like a haze of not really, of like still kind of hungover from the Super Bowl. But so I think I wrote him up. But either way, Hardaway, he's 5,900. He kind of plays a lot of minutes. His shooting in the short term is the thing that you write horror novels about. He has made like 2 shots or something like that in the last 3 games. Do you think, though, did he strike you as a tournament upside? Yeah, no. So his last 3 games, he's got he's 5 for 34 over his last from the field and 1 for 14 from the field. Does he strike you, though, as a tournament upside guy if that shot is falling? Because it seems like he's priced lower because the shooting has just been so horrific.
Well, do you remember early in the season when we went through this exact same thing with Tim Hardaway? I wonder if this will start to be baked into it, but he started the season 7 for 37 from the field. And we were sitting there still recommending him. He went out there and shot 4 for 12 in that 4th game against Brooklyn. We stuck with it because the price was really going down. And then he broke out with an 11 for 19 against Cleveland and was absolutely insane because by then the price had dropped dramatically. I mean, at that point it was like 4,000, so it was like really kind of joke price territory. But we saw everything come back to the middle for Hardaway, and that just tends to be what happens in the NBA. Like, people get very, especially DFS, the DFS community, especially the kind of the just above casual DFS community, the people that play very frequently but don't make their own projections, let's say, they get really wrapped up in the short term. And I think that's ultimately a mistake. This is exactly what causes market inefficiencies, right? Fluctuations in shooting percentage. You look at Hardaway Jr. for his career, 42.5% field goal shooter. You look at him on this season, 41.5% field goal shooter. So is that 1% difference really something you're going to sink your teeth into and say that this 25-year-old man has lost his shot? No, he hasn't lost his shot. He's just had a bad clustering effect. Or maybe he's more prone to bad clustering effects than some other players, and that's worth considering. But no, as the price goes down, it's a buying opportunity. So I'm going to buy the dip on Hardaway here, Doug, and I'd be happy to play him, even in cash games, frankly.
Multiple buy the dip mentions today. Oh, actually, we talked about that off the podcast. All right. Rockets and Nets, the other 7:30 game you mentioned. The Rockets go into this game as 10.5-point road favorites. When they're firing on all cylinders, it's very difficult to keep up with them. It seems like there could be some blowout risk for this game. It is the second highest line. No, it is the highest line on the entire slate. You know, you mentioned Harden as a guy that the minutes can be there. It looks like they're going to be kind of fully healthy, I think, tonight, because I think they're going to get Eric Gordon back. What do we want to do? How do we want to attack the Rockets here? As much upside as any team in the league, obviously, I'm a little concerned with the blowout.
Yeah, I think it's another GPP opportunity. I think guys like Harden, you know, we've seen him pay off these prices and then some even in blowouts, because typically when the Rockets are blowing people out, Harden's at the helm of that. We've also seen the opposite happen. You know, the Cleveland game, he played just 31 minutes, 39 fantasy points, I'm sorry, and was pretty ineffective. So I think for big tournaments, in the off chance that Brooklyn hangs, you know, we've talked about this already this season, but Brooklyn, not quite as bad as they've been in the past. I mean, the defensive efficiency is slightly improved. The pace of play is slightly down. I think there are scenarios in which they keep it close enough to where Harden has to play. And obviously they're poor enough defensively that Harden could really put up numbers. So I think, ultimately, I think it's probably playable for cash games. I haven't really settled in on what exactly we want to do for tonight, but just understand that you're taking on minutes risk if you're going to plug these guys in, for sure.
And on the net side, you know, we're just in the constant struggle of who's going to play minutes for them. Really, nobody plays more than 30 minutes except for Damari Carroll. Damari Carroll, it seems like the one guy, especially without Hollis Jefferson in the mix because he's still injured, it seems like the Carroll is the one guy on the team that you can sort of pencil in for right around 32 or 33 minutes. Do you feel safe? Because he's a guy that's kind of showing up as a decent points per dollar play in our system right now at 5,300 on FanDuel, and I think a little bit cheaper, yeah, 5,600 on DraftKings, which sometimes is right in the price point of a guy you kind of need to round out lineups. Would you feel comfortable running him on a Nets team that can get flaky with minutes and there's some blowout risk?
Yeah, I don't feel super comfortable with Carroll, honestly. I think it's playable, but I would be nervous, and the reasons are a few, right? So the first is that there are just multiple ways this pick can go wrong. The first is obviously a blowout, and the Nets' general finickiness when it comes to minutes. When things aren't going well for the Nets, they're happy just to play a guy 20 minutes or 19 minutes, you know, it just doesn't really matter. And Carroll, no exception. He played 23 minutes against New York just 4 games ago. And the second is performance. You know, he is not a major feature in the offense. You know, he kind of gets his when he's open, and that's definitely possible against Houston, but no sure thing. And some of the other numbers too, I'm actually really, really concerned about the rebounding for him. So on the course of the season, 6.5 rebounds per game, the last 3 games, 4 total rebounds. And that's in some of his peak minutes on the season. So I don't know what's going on there exactly, whether it's a lack of effort or just kind of a disgust for being part of a bad team, but I'm a little bit, I'm serious. You know, he's been on some actual good teams in the past, so that could be pretty frustrating. You know, basketball is an emotional game, and if you're not bringing your max energy and your opponents are, well, you're just not going to get rebounds. And the assists, the last 2 games, 0 assists too. So I definitely question Carroll's role right now. I would be happy to not play him. And, you know, if he showed up in optimal lineups, I think it would be sort of doable. But I think with the contingent blowout risk as well, I don't know why I would be there. You know, it's not that small of a slate for a Tuesday. We got 8 games going. I'd just assume not play a guy with that much risk.
Other 7:30 games, Celtics go in and play the Raptors, and what should be is a pretty nice matchup between the two teams that are top 2 in the East right now and both playing very well. No line in this game, and this is specifically related to whether Kyrie Irving is going to play or not. He's questionable right now with the quad bruise. My guess, from going from out to questionable, I mean, I clearly has him going in the right direction here. We'll probably have to reserve most of our judgments on how the Celtics are going to attack this game in general, waiting for Irving. Rozier obviously has seen a ton of minutes in the short term with both Irving and Marcus Smart out. Now Marcus Smart is on the trading block too. So I think there's some chance that Smart Well, he's out no matter what, but I could see a chance where Smart just like doesn't play again until the All-Star break, because if they're trying to shop him. Is it too early for us to really make any determinations in this game? Because we don't know about the Irving injury.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is another game that where we're going to basically be trying to gobble up value. I think you could argue that Rozier no longer a value on 7,000 anyway. One of the tougher defensive matchups you can get going up against Toronto. Toronto playing a faster pace this year, but the defensive efficiency has been spot on. Just one of the best teams in general. One of the feathers in the cap of the players in this game is that both of these teams are excellent. Normally there's blowout risk involved for both teams just based on how good they are. With just a 5-point spread going Toronto's way in this game, I think you could probably rate for a pretty close game. But this is also the second lowest total on the day. So I don't know. And for teams like, so on the one hand on Toronto, you have a team whose minutes are relatively secure. On the side of Boston, you actually have seen some salary stabilization with Irving being out. So obviously Irving coming back kind of totally kills everyone. And even if Irving's not back, I'm just not sure how much value is kicking around here.
I find like the Rozier, like guys like Terry Rozier to be the hardest guys to project in situations like this, because their performances kind of come out of nowhere. Like the role completely changes for him with Kyrie, and like in your typical on-court, off-court stuff just doesn't fully get you there. I don't think with a guy like Rozier, because you look at his last three games, he's taking 18 shots, 18 shots, 14 shots. He's shooting a ton, but then the first two games where he completely crushes, he also shot like 75% and 50% from three. So that's not going to sustain either. So I find I've struggled with this over the weekend. The last game he played against Portland, about what actual true projections for Rozier are, because he just like could be great and it could be luck. And the whole thing's a little bit weird. Hopefully we don't have to make the determination, because I think sure. Kyrie's going to come back.
Well, the thing on a guy like Rozier too, and I think this is like an important point for people when you're looking at guys who are filling in for backups, is that I want to key in on the rebounding in particular. There's a reason why most point guards don't average what he's been averaging in the last four games, which is around 9 rebounds a game. The reason for that is that's just extremely hard to sustain over the course of a whole season when you're both dribbling the ball up the court, the prime distributor, trying to get in the lane and score buckets. And so most guys ease off and settle in at a number much lower than that. And I think for Rozier, it would be foolhardy to just think that he's the second coming of Russell Westbrook based on a 4-game stretch. And if you put those rebounds down in a more normalized area, say like a reasonable area, in my opinion, like 5 rebounds a game, well, you're shaving 6-7 fantasy points off a game. And that's a lot for a guy who's 7,000 right now. Yeah, we see two tremendous performances against Atlanta and New York, two very good matchups, by the way. But are you really going to count on him to be like threatening a triple-double every night like he did against New York? I just don't see it. So 7,000, maybe it's the right price for him. I don't think it's the right price in a really bad matchup against Toronto.
Last 7:30 game is one that even basketball diehards, I think, would struggle to turn on the television. Grizzlies go in and play the Hawks. Hawks are slight favorites here. The relevant injury news and notes here: Ersan Ilyasova is going to come back. The only reason I mention him here is because Dwayne Dedman did draw the start for him last game. It was something of a value play, but it looks like Ilyasova is going to come back. It'll be interesting to see if they keep Dedman in the starting lineup. I'm not sure what they're going to do there. I'm sure the other thing, Wayne Seldon's questionable. I don't know. I'm struggling for this game. Anything you like here at all from either side? I watch a ton of basketball, and this will not be hitting the television in my house.
No, probably not for me either. But I do think Andrew Harrison's playable again. You know, he's been a guy who's been sort of up and down, and you don't love that Chalmers came back and, you know, he played 10 minutes last game. That could be on the rise. But we've seen Harrison return value. It is a really good matchup against Atlanta. Obviously, Tyreek being out continues to leave big-time opportunity. And people should also keep an eye on Wayne Seldon's status here, because if Wayne Seldon should miss, that's going to open up even more backcourt minutes in particular. Now, Seldon's actual performance fell off a cliff after his huge games against Phoenix and Indiana. So, you know, even at sub 4,000 with Chalmers back, there potentially is a little bit too much risk there. Although I still think he's, you know, I still think he's probably playable on a sub $4,000 price tag. If not, like, you can't pencil him in for 9x or anything, but still playable. But if Seldon were to miss, then all of a sudden those backcourt guys go up even more in value for me.
Before we get to the 8 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. Hopefully you just made a ton of money playing Fantasy Factor, Super Bowl squares, big game squares, big Super Bowl game squares from last weekend. But Fantasy Factor is chugging along. They'll continue offering basketball free rolls on Fridays and just great basketball contests. Really perfect for people who play between, say, $5 and $100 per night. If you're not a super shark, you don't plan on putting in a few thousand dollars spread across multiple huge tournaments, I think Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and get some edge. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
One lone 8 o'clock game. The Wizards go in and play the Sixers. Sixers are 6.5 point favorites. Obviously, the Wizards still without John Wall. Bradley Beal coming off. They're on the back to back right now. They did beat the Pacers last night. Beal struggled. Well, Beal was fine from the field, 9 for 16. Didn't do anything else. 3 assists, 1 rebound, no blocks or steals. The usage, obviously, for him with Wall goes up pretty significantly. It really goes up across the board for everybody in the starting lineup when Wall's not there, because he's just such a ball dominant guard. But with Beal, have we seen the price climb? I'm not sure. Like, we've seen, you know, Beal is one of these guys, like, when Wall's out, he's usually just this auto lock and load guy, right? Because it's just the opportunity's there. And for the three games before that, he was basically paying 5X on this and then struggled yesterday. Are we reading anything into that yesterday's performance, or are we still willing to play him at even an elevated $9,000 salary?
Yeah, I think it's more the price that's the consideration rather than what he did yesterday or in the last game. That's kind of things that's going to happen. You can't read too deeply into one performance. Just like we talked about Rozier kind of randomly grabbing tons of rebounds all of a sudden. Beal went the other way. You know, it was kind of steadily turning in 6 or so rebounds a game. Went down to 1. That's just variance. That's going to happen. The ball doesn't bounce your way. You're not going to grab it. And then the assists went down too. You know, we see a big time increase in time of possession as the Wizards have kind of shifted away from having a really true pass first point guard the way Wall can be when everything is clicking right. So Beal was dishing out 6-7 assists a game. For him to go back down to 3 assists, which is below his season average that even includes significant time on court with Wall, looks like an aberration as well. So I'm not concerned about the performance on Beal, but the $9,000 price tag is a bigger consideration for me. I'm not sure that we can just go ahead and assume that Wall being out means he's going to raise his season average of 38 fantasy points a game up to the 45 plus that we would need to justify this price. And so for that reason, I would probably just assume not play Beal, although I could be talked into it if that's how the salaries worked out.
And then, you know, I think you can like take a shot on Otto Porter getting hot from 3. And those are really the only two guys I get all that excited about. Now on the Philly side, you know, they played Embiid for the first time in a back-to-back the other day, which is a good encouraging sign for him going forward, at least with his minutes, and played him 33 and 31 minutes on that back-to-back. Now, not on one here. It's a good matchup. Cortado's a very bad defender. Washington, not all that good defending the interior. Could we see Embiid maybe creeping up into cash game consideration, even with some of these other big-name guys on the slate?
I don't know. Playing Embiid at 10,000 plus, I feel like is sort of a dicey proposition. I think I'm also higher on Gortat's defense than you are. The Wizards have been actually quite tough on opposing centers since, you know, from a fantasy perspective, since Gortat's been involved. And he kind of had that reputation even back to his Orlando days. So I think Gortat is not as juicy a matchup as you do, I guess. The thing about Gortat, of course, is he only plays half the game. So you're going to get half the game against Mahimni or somebody else. But Mahimni also a pretty decent defender. So, you know, I don't see the matchup as the same way you do. And for that reason, I would just assume not play Embiid here.
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers here. They're right around league average in defending centers. And like you said, it is only Gortat for minimum minutes, basically.
I don't know. I have it on RotoWire, their DBP. Take it for what it's worth. But Washington being a bottom five matchup for opposing centers.
Yeah, we don't pull from there specifically. And we kind of put together a bunch of different stats. And it's very close to league average, but it's slightly better than league average.
It depends on who you turn to. But,
yeah. anything else you like about this game? Simmons at 8,500. Other considerations for the Sixers, and they're supposed to put up points here. I'm just wondering if there's anything else that we can kind of draw out from this game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's a high total game relative to the rest of the slate, and so for that reason, I think you'll see some of the usual suspects. Robert Covington is a guy who could be there one game, be gone the next. Like, it's just amazing to look at some of these game logs for him to go 34 minutes against Miami, 17 fantasy points. 35 minutes against Indiana, 37 fantasy points. You're getting a pretty high standard deviation buying in on some of these Philly guys, and kind of makes sense as they try to figure out, you know, they have a lot of really high usage guys with both Simmons and Embiid, and kind of some of their backcourt guys too can gobble up a lot of usage. So, you know, when that happens, when you're on a team with guys who are very ball dominant like Simmons and Embiid, one of the highest usage centers in the league on a per minute basis, that's going to mean some of the peripheral guys are going to disappear from time to time. So some guys, and it creates interesting pricing opportunities for big tournaments too, on guys like, say, Sarge, for instance, or the aforementioned Covington. But for cash games, I'm feeling a little hesitant here.
In a game that's going to draw a lot of DFS looks, I think the Lakers and the Suns play. Phoenix goes into play the Lakers, yeah. In LA. This is a 10:30 game. Now, luckily, we have injury news already posted for the Suns at least, and they've already ruled out Devin Booker, and it looks like Tyler Ulis is going to start. Now, without Booker, Booker had been starting basically at the point guard as they'd run Booker, Jackson, and Warren together in lineups in the short term. Ulis is going to step in. They're already without Isaiah Kanan. They cut Mike James, obviously. They don't really have much in the way of guards. Do we want to just go very high? I'm prepared to be very bullish on the three of those guys, specifically Ulis, Jackson, and Warren's minutes here, because it seems like the plan is going to be play them a ton in the backcourt. And I understand this is famous last words on the Suns and all, but I mean, do we see these guys as just coming in as, I mean, possibly just even stacking them all together against the Lakers team that's pretty bad on defense, or excuse me, plays not bad on defense, but plays very fast.
Yeah, I actually like both sides of the game here. And, you know, Vegas has this as an 8-point spread the Lakers way. I'm going to go ahead and just take the Suns and the 8 points, I think, in that matchup. Yeah, Booker is significant for them, but I think they actually have some interchangeable parts. And a lot of the stuff that Booker does best, like score in particular, I think they have guys that can supplement that. So, yeah, I really love the Phoenix backcourt guys. Ulis in particular just seems like a tremendous value here. And then going the other way, give me some Josh Hart, too. You know, he's at just 5,000 right now. He's just rebounding the hell out of the ball. This is one I'm curious to know your thoughts on, because I just got done saying how I wasn't sure Rozier was going to continue this huge rebounding pace. Josh Hart, if you look at the time on, time off data this year, and as a starter and when he's not, I'll just pull out some specific examples. So early this season, when he was playing 30 plus minutes, he's going 10 rebounds, 6 rebounds, 8 rebounds, 6 rebounds. And then when the minutes go down to his backup role, and so let's say, okay, so he's got a game, 29 minutes, 8 rebounds, right? When he's in the backup role, he seems to just not rebound the ball at all. And I don't know if it's an effort issue or what, but 21 minutes, 1 board, 19 minutes, 2 boards, you know, 21 minutes, 2 boards. Comes right back into the starting lineup, 14 rebounds, 11 rebounds, no problem. Yeah. Brooklyn and OKC. That strikes me as sort of like an energy and an effort issue. I think if he draws the start tonight, phenomenal, almost must play for cash.
Yeah, he's been starting a point guard as they've shifted around who they want to be the ball handler without Lonzo Ball, because they had started Ennis for a while, but then they were playing Clarkson more off the bench, and then now they kind of have seemed to settle on Hart. Again, this is a team that just changes the way the wind blows in terms of like who they're going to play and who plays minutes. Now, I'm always encouraged, though, when guys at least are playing well from a statistical standpoint, because it seems like that's their best chance to stick in the starting lineup for the Lakers in the short term. Yeah, I think Hart is a phenomenal cash gameplay. I think Ingram is a great cash gameplay as well. Ingram's doesn't have a huge upside, but he's one of the few Lakers whose minutes are relatively secure. And that's the one that speaks a lot for when you're on the Lakers, because that's not the case with guys like Julius Randle, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. These guys will just play 24 minutes if Walton doesn't like something that they're doing. Ingram, it does not appear is in that sort of like coach's doghouse area of just getting buzzed off a minute. So a lot to like about this game. All those Phoenix guys we mentioned, the Lakers guys, you can take a shot on like the aforementioned Randall in GPPs. I think Clarkson off the bench always has some upside. So there's a ton to like about this game. It's going to be funny because we're going to be sitting there kind of with lineups, I suspect, just kind of waiting. Nothing's going to happen until 10:30 in a lot of our lineups.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel too. I think there's so much value concentrated in one game here with the Phoenix LA game that you're going to wind up being able to make some pretty good looking lineups. So I would definitely stay tuned leading up to lock tonight.
And the final game, one that's another great one to watch here. OKC goes in and plays the Warriors in Golden State. Now, OKC did beat them in the first meeting, though that game was in Oklahoma City. Warriors 9.5-point favorites in this game with the highest overall implied total. I mean, they're usually in that category anyway, so it's not like some crazy number to have them have the most implied points. But 120, according to Vegas, right now. That being said, it's a little hard to find where we're going to draw value out of this game, because the players in this game, the usual suspects, are all seem to be priced pretty efficiently. And it's not like you don't get a good matchup when you play OKC. OKC, very good defending team. Yeah. And Golden State's a good defense, too. They just play at a high pace. So what are your thoughts on attacking this game from a DFS standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to attack this game from a DFS standpoint. And it's funny, too, because, you know, when you look at a game like this with one of the highest overall totals and a lot of big name sort of flashy players, you want to key in on it. And especially, like, I'm not worried about the 9.5 spread either, by the way. Golden State now officially in that deep public team territory, where if you look at most teams against the spread this year, like if you basically say, has this team paid off against the spread or have they been worse against it? Golden State this year, 23-29 against the spread. So basically they're getting a 3-point bump just by showing up and being the Warriors, because people just like to bet on the Warriors. So I think the true spread in this game is probably something more like 6.5 to 7. I'm not overly concerned, but yeah, you're getting some on the Golden State side. You just generally don't want to play guys against OKC. They've been combining pretty slow rate of play with pretty good defense, and I think that makes it an overall down matchup for them. The only plus consideration, like say for your big tournaments, is when the Golden State's actually playing good teams that can potentially hang, maybe you tap into the full depth of their minutes and you take some upside there. On the OKC side, I mean, I actually think there's potentially a little bit more value here than you do. I don't know, or even that our model does on some level. Paul George is a guy who's been playing just on lockstep, 37 plus minutes per game. He's 8,000 right now, and the fantasy points per game on the season around 38. I don't know that it's a phenomenal matchup. Like I suspect he'll draw a combination of Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, and that's not a good spot. Just kind of depends on which of those guys they want to cover Melo. But I still think 8,000 is a pretty reasonable price for him against the second fastest team in the league. So I kind of like him. Melo, probably not. I think Westbrook is going to see play tonight. Just another, you know, it's going to be another tricky decision. Who do you pay up for? Because if you look between him, Giannis, and LeBron, all of their game logs look very similar right now, which is none of them are paying off the $11,000 price tags with any regularity, but all of them have huge upside when things happen to break in their direction. So I don't know with a gun to my head which of those guys I would lean toward if I had to pick a big money guy, but I'm curious to know what you think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's going to be the hardest decision to make, because I think you have question marks around all, and we can end on this probably this note, but you have question marks around all of these, every guy in the upper tier.
There's reasons,
Harden the blowout risk. LeBron, I'm not sure we're getting good sense of like what his ultimate fantasy ability is right now with this team, so that's a question mark. Giannis, we mentioned with the minutes, and when you dip down to guys like Embiid and even Durant, the matchups just aren't all that good. And so I Curry probably is the guy that I probably draw into the most, I think, in this, only because he's the cheapest. Whoa. Like he's 9,700 on FanDuel, and I think he's even a little bit cheaper on DraftKings. I don't mind the spot yet. Well, he's 96. I don't mind the spot for him here, with the idea that it's not the safest play in the world, but I don't mind. I could envision playing him even possibly in cash, and I probably wouldn't feel all that great about it, but I just don't feel all that great about anyone in this upper tier. So I think that's going to be the biggest decision people wrestle with tonight, and it'll probably just come down to where the value is elsewhere. I mean, the reason to get away from Curry or even Westbrook, or the reason you're not going to even play both of them, is because like you have a guy like Ulis sitting there. So that just locks up one of your point guard spots, basically. So I think it's going to be who kind of is left over at the positions where there isn't value. That is my guess about kind of what happens. We'll see. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, DFSR.com/fantasy will give you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. So go check that out. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, members only chat. You're all set to go to get you started for FanDuel and DraftKings lineup. So go check it out. DFSR.com/fantasy. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Wednesday basketball. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday.
Deuces.